Good evening, everyone. It's great to be with you all this evening. Tonight, we're discussing love. We're calling this the basics of love. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty of what it means to love or be loved. So we're going to keep it pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. We're starting at the, the low end of the totem pole. So I was trying to think of where can I start today that really gets us in the spirit of just understanding where it is that we begin. So, being a youth minister for a decade now, I've had three separate times in a public setting, as well as multiple times in a private setting, questions about what should I do when it comes to dating. So are you ready for some pointers on dating? Let's begin. Here's some good pointers for you. These are going to range from good principles, foundational steps to just Andrew's preferences. Artan's taking notes back there. I appreciate that. A couple of important suggestions for you on dating is, first off, everyone, only date someone you could see yourself with long term. It's a good wise step whenever it comes to like viewing time, viewing the resources and the opportunities you have. Don't waste your time dating somebody you wouldn't see yourself married to. I think it's just a good premise, even if you're young. There you go. Number two, know that that person isn't your spouse if you're dating. That just keeps a lot of things straightforward. I think that that's a good premise. If you ain't married to this person doesn't belong to you or you to them. That's just good boundaries across the board. Number three, these are some good questions when looking for a spouse. You guys ready? Or looking for someone to date. Number one, does this person serve? Is this person a serving person to others? Secondly, is this person disciplined in their life? That's helpful for finding in a person. Thirdly, are they someone who's willing to grow? Number four, really, really important. Am I asking myself the same questions? Because sometimes I look at others and scrutinize others without looking at myself first. So that's helpful. Okay, good. Now, Andrew's personal opinions on dating. Here's some Andrew opinions, 108 verse 7. Number one, don't be in a hurry. You don't have to date when you're young. Wait till you're a little older. Who said that there's a rush? My poor son is going to be in a household that we're going to be probably discouraging dating until he's like 16. Poor guy. You know, that's just the circumstance. But what's nice is we're young parents. So we can change our mind at any point. But that's our belief now. Number two, be assertive. You like someone, go for it. Men especially, take that step forward. I think that that's good. Third one, just a good premise I've seen. Don't spend a lot of money on the first date. There's a philosophy for that. There's a reason for that. I've seen guys go and spend hundreds of dollars to be impressive that first date. And I'm like, man, go out for coffee. Go take a walk. Go out to a nice food. My philosophy is start out being friends, see where it grows. So there you go. You guys learned it. You should be congratulated. You've got the pillars. And what you could tell is I've just retconned this. I knew that the youth group was going to be here tonight, and we don't have dating on the curriculum until next year. So I just wanted to use it. I wanted to talk about dating. But more importantly, I think you guys understand this. Dating and romance isn't love. There's a big difference, right? And I think we understand that on a basic premise. But like, it's a good, healthy, essential, universal part of that. But like, the butterflies aren't love. Longing isn't love. Having a crush on someone isn't love. Like, that's kind of like a good, normal step. But what is love? And today we are going to try to define that from the book of Mark. I encourage you to grab your Bibles, turn over to Mark chapter 12. We're turning over to Mark 12, and there's a few reasons for that. First one is this, is that Mark 12 was one that the youth group and I had a Devo on a month or two ago, and I thought was helpful, and I kind of wanted to flesh it out and discuss it whenever we were all together, and I'll get into the reasons for that in a little bit. But also, there's a book that Mr. Travis recommended a while ago that I'm still working on. I started it like a year ago, and then I put it aside, and now I'm coming back to it because there's a whole part on Mark. So it's been helpful as I'm studying up for the book of Mark. But there's a part of it that I thought was really interesting because many of us view our life of faith, our religion, our Christ following, we view love as a huge component of that, right? I don't think there's anyone here who, if we said define three characteristics that are helpful for your walk with Jesus, most of us would name love. Like, love is just high up on there. And I think that that's a rightful place. I think that that makes a lot of sense. And I think that we should all advocate that love is a central part of our faith. But it's interesting looking at Mark, Richard Hayes points out in his book, that Mark is someone who was the earliest gospel writer. So this is therefore one of the earliest gospel or Jesus stories and the text within that. And even within Mark, Mark 12 is really the only place that mentions the word love. And whenever we're introduced and the world is introduced to the Jesus story, love is kind of centralized here. And I'm going to make a bigger point about that in a little bit. But for now, I want us to look at a passage that many of us know, probably a lot of us could quote. It's in that holiness week. It's in that last week of Jesus' life. And he's kind of arguing with other religious leaders, and they're kind of grilling him on a lot of stuff. And you see a lot of factions being made and a lot of controversy being made. But it ends with this story that, again, many of us are familiar with, so I want to read it together. Mark chapter 12, let's read verse 28. And one of the scribes came up and heard them disputing with one another, and seeing that he answered them well, asked Jesus, "Which commandment is the most important of all?" Jesus answered, "The most important is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these." And the scribe said to him, "You are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one and there is no one besides him. And to love him with all your heart and with all your understanding and with all your strength, and to love one another, one's neighbor as oneself, is much more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." And when Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And after that, no one dared to ask him any more questions. So again, a very good passage, one that, again, if we're talking about basics, I think is one of those basic texts to our faith about what it means to truly follow God. And within this, we learn about love. And again, in one of the earlier texts of our faith, one of the few passages that mentions love, what do we learn about this? And so, again, we're going with basics. Most of us who are here on Sunday night would, you know, confess this, would advocate for this, would stand for this, but I still want to go down step by step. Number one, the basics of love. Here's what I want you to remember first off today, if I could get my notes right. Loving God is the essence of our existence. And that's it. Loving God is what our life is about and what makes sense of it all. Notice that the first commandment he says about loving God is actually two thoughts kind of tied together. It's the idea of just acknowledging that God is, that he alone is. He is the one God, he is the true God, and he alone is God. Meaning this, that he is the only true, attainable, and sustainable entity of this life that you and I get to be a part of. But secondly, remember this, that something about the quotation of from Deuteronomy 6, the Shema, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, with all your strength," emphasizes a foundational slab for young and old alike, for them to remind themselves, to write upon their hearts, to make it be something that they think about when they go to bed, that those who are wiser and more advanced will teach those who are younger to put this on every part of their life so that they remember to love God with all their heart, with all their soul, with all their strength. Life is only worth living when you love God. And that's the true statement being said here. Life is only worth living when you love God. Apart from him, there is zero life. Apart from his path is abyss. Apart from knowing him is to know nothing. To a degree, in the search of loving others and loving self, one cannot come to ever love themselves or ever love in general aside from loving, beholding him. To put it simply, you cannot know you without knowing him. Everything about these two important parts of life, to know that God is and to know that we should love him, is all put here together with this thought. To know God is to love God. To love God is to know life, and that's all there is. Do you wish to love well? Do you wish to love others well? Do you wish to love yourself the utmost? Do you wish for yourself to be loved as well? The answer to all of this is this: love God with your heart, with your mind, with your strength, with your entire being. The basics to love is this simple observation: while the heart is exceedingly good and very effective at convincing us that my ways might bring about the best amount of joy and meaning and I don't know, fulfillment in this life. The whole point of all of this is this. We offer it all to God first, and from there, love finds us. Why is that? Because he is our creator, who made us in a way and wired us to find life when we first love. So, as a reminder, love, to love God, is the essence of your existence. But secondly, I think this is very, very important, and maybe this is why we set it up for a time like this, where we were all here together, is love is practiced and experienced in community. Love your neighbor as yourself. I think that that's important. He's not here saying, do not love yourself, do not care for yourself. And this might sound like something contrary to what I'll say in a moment, but he's not even saying, don't protect yourself. He's simply saying, treat others as you would want to be treated yourself. And from there is where he says, like, the whole law is fleshed out, right? Because once you love God and once you love your neighbor, then you're kind of just migrated towards the areas and the expectations that God would want from you. Whenever you consider yourself not superior to anyone else, that's where it truly all makes sense. But understand this, love is a demonstration and a practice. We start to see and understand the love of God in a fulfilled life when we love God, played out here in this room, when we love one another. It's there where we experience the love of God. It's there where we come to understand what love kind of looks like. It's kind of takes on an image of for itself. Whenever I love others the way I would want to be loved by my God. But also it's where it goes into love everyone, my entire neighborhood, those who are the furthest regions. It is a function of life as well as the instruction by which we get to engage with a fulfilled life in God. It always, always, always invites others. It always, always considers others. One does not understand life without love. And one does not experience life without loving their neighbor. I guess that's why I wanted to teach this with everyone here, is because there is a cool element of faith in my life that I've got to experience whenever I've seen the unilateralness of love, that where the multi-generations and multi-backgrounds come together and you get to know someone else who's different than yourself and different from your way of life, and you serve that person and you consider that person, or perhaps the best way I know how to put it, is whenever I've seen that, experience that in my life, that's when I've seen the love of God the most. And so I think it's a very beautiful thing whenever there are churches that are multi-generational, multi-ethnical, multi-backgrounds, where they choose to love and blossom in a beautiful way, in a communal way that displays the goodness of God, that shows that he is alive, that he is living, and he is active, and that his fulfilled life is accessible here and now. So I just think that that's pretty cool. And we could kind of almost like end on that point. In many ways, that could be the end of it, is to love God, to love others. And that's kind of what fully ties this all together. And you know, love unto itself is kind of self-defining. Like, what does it mean to love? You just know it when you see it. But the point I want to bring up as our last point is one that, again, I think most of us affirm and know here. But I still think if we are talking about the basics, it's worth ending on this point. Because if we see loving God as the most fulfilling part of our life, and we see loving others as a huge part of experiencing that and demonstrating my love, then we kind of have to end on this quote-unquote downer that ties it all together. Because again, I was reading this book that Travis recommended, and he brought up such a good thing that where he said, like, love is not brought up very much in this book. Jesus is described as the beloved one, and that's kind of it outside of this section. Instead, this is my third thought for you today. Love is defined in an action. Love is defined in action as experience, it's seen, it's demonstrated specifically in one symbol and one item. It's the cross. I think that that's what differentiates our faith from the philosophy of many others in this world. It's the reason why I've had a conversation before with someone who struggled with their belief in God and does not believe in God, as far as I'm aware anymore. And they said, you know, what makes faith or Christianity any better way of life than, you know, anyone who doesn't believe? And, you know, I brought up the idea of love and service, and they said, you know, like, kind of scoffed at the idea of, like, well, I think anyone can love. You don't have to be a Christian to love. And that's where we kind of get the term, and this is what Richard Hayes brought up. He said, like, love is a term, can mean whatever you want it to mean. It can mean kindness. It can mean romance and dating. It can mean sex. It can mean brotherhood. It can just mean, like, man, I'm really fond of, you know, pepperoni pizza. And it's like love can be elevated or minimized, whatever you need for it to be. But here's one thing that is, like, singular and can't be moved and can't be negotiated around or can't be construed. It's one symbol, and that's the cross. For Mark, whenever he advocated for what our faith stands upon and what it means to actually exemplify it, and arguably what it means to love, or rather what love is, comes from it, is he says, you look to the cross of Jesus, the King who is worthy of all praise and all adoration, but selflessly took upon the sacrifice that he didn't deserve for the sake of everyone else. Let's go over to Mark 8. Mark 8 together. Mark 8 through 10 is really Jesus confronting his disciples before he goes to Jerusalem, before there's this Holy Week that transpires, and he's trying to get them to understand, to see what he's about. He's there to help them to see what our faith stands upon, because this is what our King reigns upon. Let's read Mark chapter 8, verse 31, right after Peter's confession, and he called him the Christ. Many of us know what happens right after Peter confesses Jesus as the Christ. Verse 31, he says, and he, Christ, Jesus, began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days, rise again. Many of you guys know Peter's instinctive reaction to that. It's not good. He says, like, that should not happen. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. And so this is what he goes on to say, verse 34. And calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Chapters 8 through chapter 10 has multiple different times where Jesus says the Son of Man must die and suffer. And that is the whole point of the gospel story, the Jesus story, and yours and my faith, is that love is an aspirational thing that should push us to consider others, to show love to others, to be kind to others, to be charitable to others. But we are confined and urged to one specific definition of what that looks like. That's challenging. That's very simple to understand, but is difficult to live out. We have been called to see the cross as the symbol of our life, the symbol of our existence, and ultimately how we show love. So whenever Jesus is saying demonstrate love or to show love, this whole time he's been showing what it looks like. It's to be, consider yourself less than everyone else, to put others above yourself. It's kind of difficult. It's kind of hard. It's kind of challenging. I'd say it's fair to say whether you're a teenager and you haven't decided to follow Jesus for yourself, that guess what? Asking someone to just give it all up, to sacrifice yourself, that's hard. It requires you to consider the implication, what that looks like. For many of us who are here who have sought to follow Jesus for our lives, to worship and revere him and to admire what he stands for, it's still super easy to keep his call for us at arm's length and to still say, like, full adoration or full surrender, that's a bit much for me to respond to. And so I think many of us have been in that place, just like the disciples were in chapters 8 through 10, where we're trying to wonder, what will I do? And will I see him as the King that he's called for me to be, which is to be a king, or to be a man like he was king, which considered others above himself to the point of death? So since that's hard to do, I just want us to take a moment. As Brother Travis preached on this morning, it is Holiness Week. It is the week before the death of Jesus. And I just jotted down a couple thoughts this week of things that Jesus did that maybe I'm still struggling with full surrender or full cross or loving the way that Jesus has called for me to love, but I can still see his act of love this week. And I don't know. I'm not saying I can mimic it fully, but I can take that spirit with me and practice it in my life. Here's a few things I thought of that Jesus did. Jesus sought the glory of God. He wanted God to be glorified over himself. And that's hard. That's one of the biggest surrenders we give up when we choose to follow Jesus, is to not take the glory ourselves, but to give it to God. But that's still something we can see that Jesus did in love and in sacrifice, and we can try to practice for ourselves. Jesus spoke boldly for his Father. For some of us, that's really easy. We like speaking. We like speaking up, and we like advocating for what our, where our convictions are. For some of us, that's like the biggest request of all, because it really pushes us beyond not just like comfortability, but like beyond what we feel like we can do. But still, Jesus did that for his Father. I think we can mimic that ourselves. Jesus served his friends and showed them humility. If you come into my office, you'll see the picture of Jesus on his knees washing his disciples' feet. He deserved all glory, and he gave it to those who were around him. I think that there's a way that we can practice that within our life and show that kind of Christ-like love. Jesus sought forgiveness against those who hurt him. That's a tough one. That's a challenging one. It's a lot easier if you're giving glory to God, you're sacrificing your needs for everyone else, and you're willing to die for your love. It makes you give up your grudges pretty fast. And then also, Jesus showed faithfulness in the face of pain and tribulation. And so can we. These are hard things that are like reflected in God coming to human form that are hard for us to take on, but we can see what love looks like through his example, through his walk. And maybe if nothing else, even if we're struggling with and wrestling with and grappling with where I will love and where I'm being held back, the very least this week, we can behold what he has done. We can reflect on it in our reading. We can reflect on it in some very good shows out there that show what that looks like. Or we can just reflect on it in our own time of meditation. We can fixate on his display of perfect love that he has called us to see. And see and behold what true love is. It is self-sacrificial to the highest order. There's no questions about it. It's sacrificing of who you are completely. It is putting others on par with your own needs, if not above your needs entirely. And while it's all encompassing and demanding, it is also life. The only life to be lived to the fullest, with the one who showed you what life and love looks like to begin with. So as we go into Holiness Week, let's remember that together. I appreciate you all. I pray that you have a great week. If you have any needs, please come forward together as we stand and together as we sing.